D4.
Number 15B.
So that spirit really gives us that point where we have seen here the marvel happens that the one ideal is infinitely individualized as ideal ideas. And spirit does that because spirit is that synonymous term for God which has no barriers, no limitations, which does not know any divisions. It is always the whole in its infinitude. And so we get here from the absolute point of view, you see, that life, truth and love in its identical nature pours itself out to the universe, but every time through spirit in a different way, in a rarefied way. When it comes in that way to the human, what it does is that it sorts out that which is wrong, that it begins to separate, purify a situation, so that only the good is coming out, so that only the real is coming out, and so that, like in the second day, in the firmament, we really have that great separation of what is right and what is wrong. And so in the human we experience a great purification, a great sorting out of things. So that in one's human experience, one suddenly begins to feel that the Christ is working so that little by little it brings order into a situation. Bringing order into a situation means that very things are separated, are pushed out, which do not belong into the picture, and that the real and the pure is brought forth clearer and clearer. Then, when we go further from spirit to mind, we know that mind is that which is characterized by manifestation in the Christ. That Christ is that which makes mind manifest as ideas. All is infinite mind, the Word, and its infinite manifestation, Christ. Showing that each one of these infinitely diversified, classified, and individualized ideas, that each one of them is really manifesting the whole of mind. And we come right back to the manifestation of the idea, and the idea is the image in mind. And so each idea is brought forth in a spiritually tangible, concrete way, or is being understood, or comprehended, or apprehended in a concrete way. When the idea is manifested, then naturally the illusion can no more be manifested. Therefore, then the illusive sense is being completely corrected. And so, from the humanly objective standpoint, we experience the manifestation of mind as a law of correction, or as the outcome of what we say of demonstration, as the idea being established in the place of the erroneous situation. You can see the law of correction is not something that mind is intrinsically, because mind does not correct, because it has nothing to correct within itself. Mind can only manifest its own idea, but that appears in its impact on the opposite standpoint as correction. So in this way, you can see the nature of the Christ order, which is quite impressive, because in this way we really begin to see the law behind really that Christ translation. Naturally, you see, if we know that law, then we can consciously go with that law. That's always the great point, that up to the point where we say there is a translation, or there is mind and its infinite manifestation, We accept that as a religious belief. We accept that just on face value, but we really do not know how it manifests itself. And the understanding only comes when we see the step-by-step development of such a process. When we see the step-by-step process, then we can make the further step that we say, all right, then let's go consciously with that law. And so you can see if the problem states itself, and we always have seen the problem states itself on the level of Christian Science, namely, that if there is a situation which needs correction, which needs healing, which needs a solution, we just can't say, well, mind is the law of correction. We jolly well have to see how that law operates. And that law operates through the whole Christ order. And so within myself, we can just sit back and be quiet within oneself and say, now, what is going on? What is going on in reality? And I can take the absolute sense, the divinely subjective standpoint, and just fill my thought and see, well, there is nothing going on in being but a divine principle. Divine principle means principle in its divine operation, in its divine expression. Therefore, I see in consciousness that principle can't help but make life manifest itself, the lifehood of man, of life. That principle can't operate anything else but to make truth express itself. It's the truthhood of being. And I can see that that principle cannot do anything else but operate love as the lovehood of being. And I feel that the whole lifehood, truthhood, lovehood is just going on and pouring its whole abundance of being on every situation. Pouring on every situation, and I have already touched soul, and I must say yes, on every situation in its identical nature. It will never lose its identity when it goes out into the world to a situation. It will never change within itself. It keeps up its own identity. But it comes to every situation, and I come to spirit as that which is infinitely diversified in that life, truth, and lovehood. Infinitely diversified so that at the point of mind I can see every idea is manifesting not only mind, but is manifesting the divine principle, life, truth, and love. And so with this consciousness I can stay, and I go with that law instead of against that law. And naturally at the same time I can see what will happen with, as that this is the Christ consciousness, I can see what will that Christ consciousness do to the incarnate error. What will it do to the humanly objective standpoint? What will be the impact on that? And I see that consciousness as soul will have the impact that it begins to overturn and overturn and overturn and overturn. How long is it going to overturn? Until it purifies and purifies in spirit every little thing. Until it really chucks out everything that does not belong to that situation. So that finally the situation is corrected through that wonderful Christ law. And I have the manifestation of the idea in spite of error as the law of correction. And I can therefore I'm not worried when within that consciousness and holding that consciousness I begin to see that the situation begins to transform, to overturn. I'm not worried about it. I see that's only the Christ idea at work in the human. The Christ idea itself remains what it is. It's divinely subjective, its identity. But on the human it changes and changes, begins to exchange, begins to transform, to overform, and so on, to reform, and purifies the situation more and more and more until finally, at the point of mind, the idea just sticks out and says, voila, here we have it. Here we have it. So, can you also see why in this way soul, spirit, and mind really become the law of analysis, uncovering, and annihilation? You know that Mrs. Eddy said, it is often asked why Christian Science has been revealed to me as one intelligence analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the false testimony of the physical senses. So she could see that her method is a method of a scientific method of analysis, uncovering, annihilation. Here we have that law, when we stay with the divine principle, life, truth, and love, that at the point of soul, it begins to analyze the situation, because we throw the whole true nature on the situation. Therefore, we investigate the situation with the truth of being. And therefore, through that analysis, we begin to uncover what needs to be uncovered. It begins to sort out, that's the purification process, until finally, when she says, error uncovered is two-thirds destroyed, and the last third destroys itself, we come to mind the law of correction. So, again, you see, we don't have to analyze a situation. We don't have to uncover a situation. Let that law of the Christ do it. If we let the Christ do it, then we will be sure that the right situation will be established, and that really that which needs at this moment be corrected will be corrected. Again, I want to stress it, because I know these are the arguments that come up. I want to stress it again, that when we look at this Christ translation, which comes to incarnate error, that in spite that it comes to incarnate error on this humanly objective platform, that in spite of that, the Christ itself does not know the flesh nor the error to be destroyed. If we stick really to the divinely subjective standpoint. From the divinely subjective standpoint, we never leave, so to say, the absolute sense of the Christ, because those synonymous terms do not know the opposite. They never know the opposite. And therefore, in consciousness, we just can't stick there. So that, really, from the divinely subjective standpoint, we see that life, truth, and love, when it comes to the point of soul, that it translates itself to the universe without changing its nature. And that in spirit, it never mingles with the situation. Spirit never mingles by coming to a situation with the situation. It keeps its purity. And when it comes to mind, to the point of mind, it never knows its opposite, it never knows which error needs to be destroyed, because it only knows itself. So that is very important to keep in mind, you see, that the translation itself stays with the synonymous terms and sticks to them, never leaves them, and therefore never sees the error that needs to be destroyed. Only from the humanly objective standpoint, we experience the impact of the Christ as transformation in soul, then as a purification process in spirit, and then really as the correction of thought, of consciousness, of the situation. So, in this way, we begin to see that really the Christ is that, what Mrs. Eddy says, that is the divine message from God to man, speaking to the human consciousness. It comes right down where we are aware in understanding of the divine principle. And in this way gives an explanation of the law, of that mystery of the Christ, that the whole of being, the divine principle, is in understanding. Comes as Immanuel to the point of understanding in his, and takes on the form of understanding. That's the Christ, which then builds that coincidence between God and man, which then makes that spiritual agreement between God and man, because then God does not exist anywhere except in our understanding. It's terrific, the implication. If we understand this Christ translation, then we understand the whole history of mankind. Then we understand how each one of us really can be a pioneer in the spiritual universe of the idea. If this translation is understood, the conclusion therefore is that every idea that is being manifested here at the point of mind, that every new idea that comes to birth, that every idea that brings mankind forward, that every new vision at any time come, has never come from people. It has come from the divine principle. It has only used some people. It has used some people here in the humanly objective way. But the divinely subjective way was principle's own manifestation of itself as idea, and therefore has come to the universe as a history of ideas. And therefore, it wasn't the prophets, it wasn't the old patriarchs, it wasn't Jesus, it wasn't Plato, it wasn't Spinoza, it wasn't whatever philosopher you want to take from the Middle Ages and so on. It wasn't Mrs. Eddy, it wasn't Mr. Dawley, it wasn't me, it isn't anybody who brings forth new ideas. It is the divine principle that impels its own idea to come forth. And therefore, the history of the spiritual idea is the history of God himself, and not the history of philosophers and great thinkers. The thinkers have only been used to think the way the idea wanted them to think. And that's the new philosophy also in any way over in Europe. I don't know about here, but the great philosophers of our days in Europe are those like Heidegger and Hartmann and so on, who show that those great thinkers were never free to think what they were thinking, but they were impelled to think that what the divine principle impelled them to think. And that therefore the history of idea came not from people, but from the divine principle. And therefore, if Plato or Aristoteles, Ezekiel, or if Jesus, or if Mrs. Eddy would not have been willing to be used as a transforming element, as a transparent element, somebody else would have been used, because the idea has its own history, and therefore uses any channel, any people, any situation to pull itself through in an ordered way. This is, by the way, even what the natural scientists who investigate the science of sciences say today, that the development of the natural science would have been very much the same if there would not have been a Newton, a Galilei, if there would not have been an Einstein or a Heisenberg. There would have been others, but the idea would just have been developed the very same way. This is what we have to learn from this translation. If it is true that being has a Christ, that being has an idea, that the Christ is the idea of God, then we must see that the idea of God works by itself, not by people. And that therefore, every time when the time is ripe, a new idea in the development of the history of idea will break through. And we'll use those channels, those people, those possibilities, those symbols, which are adapted to the age. So the channel itself is not so important. They are exchangeable. But can you see what we gain from that? From that we gain that we don't have to think that unless we are one out of those 10 billion people who may appear every century or every 2,000 or 3,000 years who can see something higher, that therefore we are no good. We can see if there is a law of revelation. And it's only a matter of opening us, of opening up ourselves for that Christ translation. And then we are the very channel, the very medium down through. Which means that if we understand this Christ order, and the more we understand it, the more the new revelation of being, the new insight into being will come through each one of us. Through each one of us. So that each one is fundamentally a revelator. Each one. It's not true that there is just one revelation and then there is an end to it. And that's final. If that would be true, God would be dead. And I don't quite agree with the theory that God is dead. I only can agree with the theory that people's concept of God is dead. But the divine principle certainly is not dead and has said, I have given my final revelation some 100 years ago and that's the end forever. But the divine principle is constantly, constantly, constantly revealing itself and revealing itself. And whoever goes with that law, whoever is in the rhythm of that law, whoever is synchronized with that law, is certainly taking on that wonderful adventure of serendipity where he just makes new discoveries which he has never looked for, which he has never thought he could see. Let's see that the divine principle is only working through its own synonymous terms, and they are unlimited. So if we have the Christ consciousness, which means that we adopt that consciousness which is given in that Christ order, then the whole of being is revealing itself through each one of these, of that consciousness.